Hi, I'm Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. In today's episode, we listen to Dr. Stacey L. Smith. Smith is founder and director of the Media, Diversity, and Social Change Initiative at the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California. During her talk at the conference last month in Los Angeles, Dr. Smith took a look at how girls and women are represented in film, both in front of and behind the camera. While women are making strides, as recently illustrated in Wonder Woman's global box office success, we still have plenty of progress to make. Dr. Smith reveals what's what via data gleaned from examining the top 100 domestic box office performers. Here she is.
I'm actually a little bit embarrassed. I was just referred to as the legend, which is a joke in my media lab, and none of you probably know me. So I hope I can live up to the term. It's actually great to be here. And it's an excellent week for women in film. Just by a show of hands and maybe a round of applause, how many people have gone out to the box office to see Wonder Woman this weekend? Amazing. And it's actually the perfect backdrop to assess how women are doing in motion picture content. And a great part of the success of Wonder Woman was thanks to Diane Nelson, who was just up here on stage moments ago. So please give her another round of applause. Today we're going to take a few moments to take a deep dive and look at how girls and women are doing on screen and behind the camera in motion picture content. And you might think, why film? I think film is a great opportunity to give us a look to see how issues of representation are changing or not changing currently in the industry. But if you work for TV, interested in digital or other forms of video content, stories matter. And what I want to hopefully get across to you today is some of the data that we know that might be perpetuating inequality explicitly or implicitly. And we're here to help at the Media Diversity and Social Change Initiative. So if you're interested in film, TV, digital, video, and any sort of short or long form storytelling, please don't hesitate to reach out. We would love to help you with your inclusion issues as it pertains to content and hiring behind the camera. Now, before I get started, I just want to give a quick warning. My data are a tad depressing, so I apologize in advance. I'm about to bring down the entire room's mood. But hopefully, a part of this conference, which is not like an academic conference at all, hopefully there's a lot of alcohol involved, and you'll be able to assuage some of those negative moods that are setting in with this data. So let's buckle our seatbelts and let's get started and take you through how we're actually doing in terms of issues of representation in cinematic content. Each year at the Media Diversity and Social Change Initiative, we take a look at the top 100 grossing films to see how they're doing when it comes to issues of inclusion on screen. Every year, we examine the top 100 domestic box office performers, the top performers here in this country, and we take a look at how they're doing across a series of different groups. Now, to compare to US demographic data, we look at every speaking or named character on screen. All a character has to do is say one word to count in our investigation. This is a very low bar. Now, with every character, we measure a series of attributes. We look at their demographics, gender, race, ethnicity, age, their domesticity, are they parents, are they in relationships, and we take a look at issues of sexualization as well. Let's answer a few questions about how inclusion is doing in popular motion picture content, according to the question on screen. First, let's take a look at gender. Across 35,205 speaking characters in 800 of the top films from 2007 to 2015, females only occupy 30.4% of all speaking characters on screen. Only 12% of 800 films, 12%, have girls and women in roughly half of the cast. This calculates into a ratio of 2.3 males to every one female speaking character on screen. And if you look at the data, despite all the press attention, despite all the activism, the percentage of females on screen in 2015 is no different than the percentage of females on screen in 2007. And if we compare our data to another investigation that was done from 1946 to 1955, there's been no change in the film industry for girls and women for over a half of a century, more than 50 years, despite women being half the population and buying half of the movie tickets in this country. You might say, okay, well, that's all speaking characters, but surely with Hidden Figures and Fences and all of these other female-driven films, like Wonder Woman, female leads clearly have to have increased over the last few years. That, too, is fiction. Out of the top 100 films of 2015, only 32 depicted a female lead or co-lead driving the story. Worse still, last year, only 3 of the top 100 films featured a female lead or co-lead from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. Only 5 of the top 100 films of 2015 featured a woman 45 years of age or older at the time of theatrical release. So we still have issues of inclusion, whether it's who's driving the story or who's across the entire ecosystem on screen. Now, in addition to just counting characters, we also look at the nature of roles. And I just want to point out one particular feature. We look at issues of sexualization because we know that exposure to sexualized content or objectified content can lead to body shame, appearance anxiety, internalization of the thin ideal among some females. And what we see in the research is that females are about 3 times as likely to be sexualized, shown partially or fully naked, and often referred to as attractive. Now, we also look at women in animation. And what's interesting here is that sometimes females in animation, they're so thin that their waist size approximates the circumference of their upper arm. What we like to say about these gals, and we had no idea we were making a political comment at the time, is that they have no room for a womb or any other internal organ. One thing that's disturbing from this data, and you can see on your right in this circle, that females 13 to 20 years of age are just as likely to be sexualized as 21 to 39 year olds as well. So we're seeing sexualization on screen in film start at a very early age. Now, in addition to gender, we also look at race ethnicity. We know that 40% of the US population comes from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups, and fully half or more of the kids in this country between the ages of 0 and 5 are not Caucasian. So understanding the changing demographics in terms of storytelling becomes actually really important. Only 26% of all roles on screen in film, top 100 films, 26% are filled with underrepresented racial or ethnic groups. In 2015, 17 films didn't feature one speaking character that was Black or African American, 40 didn't feature any Latino speaking characters, and 49 were devoid completely of Asian speaking characters. Now, many of these data points have not changed since 2007, and I don't anticipate them changing, even with the success of movies like Hidden Figures. 2016, we see very similar patterns as well. Now, one thing that we do that other groups don't do is we intersect gender and race ethnicity in a really important way, to look at who is completely invisible on screen in film. And if we take a look at last year, when we intersect gender and race, a really important picture or invisibility emerges in our data. Fully 48 of the top 100 films didn't feature one Black or African American female on screen that spoke. Not one. 65 of the top 100 films didn't feature a single Latina on screen. 70 didn't feature an Asian or Asian American female speaking character, and 93 films were devoid of females from the LGBT community. Now, we've been measuring the LGBT community for a few years, and there are very few portrayals from this community, male or female. If we look to 2014 and 2015, there are very few LGBT characters, speaking characters shown on screen. However, One positive or bright spot on this slide is that a full 40.6% of the LGBT characters from 2015 were from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups. 18 films did not feature one individual from this community. Now, a lot of folks are talking about the rise of transgender portrayals in media, and that's not the case in film. If we look at the top 100 films from 2014, 2015, and 2016, 300 movies, there is only one transgender character across all of those stories. Last year, for the first time, we started measuring portrayals of disability. And as you can see from the next slide, portrayals of disability are disconcerting in film. Only 2.4% of all speaking characters were depicted with a disability across the top 100 films of 2015. Most of those disabilities were physical in nature. Very few were actually communicative disabilities. Yet, individuals in the United States, 20% report having some form of physical, mental, or communicative disability. Now, if you put all of these data together, and we look at issues of exclusion and underrepresentation, and we compare to US statistics, females, girls and women, are still the most underserved community in motion picture content, followed by people with disabilities, followed by the Latino community. And as we're going to see in just a few minutes, this might mean leaving a lot of money on the table for content creators that are missing part of their target audience. Now, if you want to change any of the patterns that I've just talked about, there's actually one really simple solution. All individuals in the industry need to do is hire more female directors. Did you know what happens? I know, right? Do you know what happens when you have a female director behind the camera? This is actually kind of funny. We did one of the only studies on short films worldwide. And then we took a deep dive into a particular short film festival. And then we looked at independent film. And something hit us that we didn't realize in our lab until a few years ago. If you have a female director, you're going to have, this is before working in the studio system, just the decisions that they make in and of themselves. You have A, more girls and women on screen. B, more women at the center of the story. C, more racial and ethnic diversity. This is now actually getting to be really interesting if you're trying to target multiple audiences. D, you're going to have more characters in your stories 40 years of age or older. And E, you will hire other women in key production roles. So one simple solution to this issue of exclusion on screen is simply hiring people that care about inclusion, period. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. We are probably the top research team studying the barriers and impediments facing female directors in film. We released a study earlier this year looking at the prevalence of female directors across the top 1,000 films over the last decade. Our research and the statistics are dismal. It's bad to be a woman on screen. It's worse to be a female director. If we look across 1,114 directors in the top 1,000 films over the last 10 years, only 4% of those directors are women. This calculates into a gender ratio that's unthinkable. For every 24 jobs that go to male directors, only one job goes to a female director. And these percentages have largely not changed at all in the last decade. Now, due to generous funding with the Sundance Institute and Women in Film and Cliff Bar, we've actually been able to map out the pipeline of female directors trying to navigate career sustainability. We also pulled in some data from the DGA. If we were to look at the careers of female directors, fully 28% of all directors at the top film festivals worldwide, 28% are women. At Sundance, over the same time frame, several years, 27% of all directors are female. First-time episodic directors of television, 19%, but only 4% of top grossing films are helmed by female directors. This is a 24% drop from narrative short films to top grossing content. I have affectionately referred to this as the fiscal cliff facing women as they try to navigate the terrain within the entertainment industry. So what do we do? It's a lot of gloom and doom, and it's a lot of negative content. How in the world do we fix this and think about these patterns in light of other forms of storytelling on digital platforms, television, or other forms of video? What are the solutions to inequality that we see on screen and behind the camera in Hollywood? I want to talk to you about four simple solutions. Some are immediate, some might take a little bit longer, but these are all tangible solutions that can move the needle for the first time on screen and behind the camera. The first solution that I've proposed, and I talked about and rolled this out in an opinion piece, I believe in The Wrap, talked about it again in my TED Talk, is for people to take power with their contracts and to put equity writers in their contractual language. Now, what do I mean by that? I originally envisioned this for A-list talent. An equity writer would be a clause in an actor's contract that stipulates that equality must be a part of the casting process and filling behind-the-scenes roles. Hollywood can use this very easily, particularly when it makes sense for the story being told. They can cast characters that look like the demography of wherever the story is taking place. And they can also consider women and underrepresented individuals for roles that traditionally skew male. Why would you do this? Because we know a lot about the decisions that are made, not with leads, not with the supporting cast, but the entire ecosystem. Often these fall prey to implicit biases, and this process can short-circuit those implicit processes that take place in the hiring and casting process. The second simple solution to dealing with inequality on screen has to do with something that I call Just Add 5. Now, go with me on a little thought experiment here for a second. I wonder if you knew that the typical feature film, 100 films and above, the top motion pictures each year, has about 40 speaking characters on screen, the typical film. I would argue that probably only 8 to 10 of those characters are actually relevant to the plot. 8 to 10, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. That means that 30 characters that speak on screen are probably not that important to the actual story being told. What would happen, or how could we get to equality quickly? Because equality hasn't been reached on screen in more than a half of a century. Well, it turns out if you do the math, it's really a pretty simple equation. If you added 5 female speaking characters each year to the top 100 films, created a new norm, repeated the process, and did this contiguously for 4 years, by 2019 or 2020, we could be at gender parity for the first time in the history of motion picture content quickly. This is a simple solution that could be taken back to any of your offices and thought about with any of the types of stories that you're creating. Now, why is this important? One, it doesn't take jobs away from male actors. It's simply adding female speaking characters to the cast. It only costs about $5,000 per film to do this. Third, all sorts of different girls and women can be added. You can add women from a series of different communities, whether it's religious-based, race and ethnicity, age, different powerful positions. But the most important reason why Just Add 5 should be an imperative is because we can actually start to counter implicit biases that we see in storytelling. This tilted nature where women represent less than a third of all speaking characters on screen. Third, when it comes to hiring behind the camera, Hollywood can think about a modified version of the Rooney Rule. Now, as many of you know, the NFL has a Rooney Rule that they use to hire. And specifically, when teams are hiring from outside the organization, they stipulated that they must consider an individual from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. Hollywood can do the same thing. They can ensure that women and people from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups appear on consideration lists for directing jobs, writing jobs, on-screen roles, and that those lists and those interviews should be in proportion to the actual pipeline of talent that exists. The fourth and final solution that I want to leave you with is probably the most important. In Hollywood, a lot of times you hear, at least the mythologizing around this is, women can't open a film. Now, this weekend counters that mythologizing. A female badass actually opened a film in probably the most extraordinary way. But still, the decision-making is, will there be a return on investment domestically and internationally if you put a female at the center of the story? Matter of fact, the story goes something like this: girls and women won't return on the investment that boys and men will, so therefore, can you change the lead character to a male? What's green light the tentpole action film with a male lead? Now, what's the problem with this logic is that production costs are confounded with gender. Films with male stars, male leads, they typically have higher budgets than stars or leads that are female. So is it the production cost that's driving box office performance, or is it the gender of the lead character? We don't know from that line of thinking. So what we did a few years back at the lab, we did a pretest thinking about the economics of what sells in the film industry. We looked at a dozen production, distribution, exhibition factors, anywhere from rating, genre, director power, star power, seasonality, competition at the box office, production costs, widest point of release, story strength. And we put them into a structural equation model to see if gender of the lead character drives box office, or is it these other factors? Surprise, surprise. Domestically, having a female lead or co-lead was not a significant predictor of box office performance. What was? Production cost, meaning the more money behind a film, the more money it's likely to make, how many theaters that film opened on, and actually the Metacritic score or the story strength of that film. These were the more potent predictors of economic success at the box office. The surprise was when we did this analysis internationally. Production costs, widest point of release, story strength. Still, the most important independent or indirect paths to box office performance internationally. But female leads, they actually were a significant and positive predictor over those films without a female lead, driving money at the international box office. There's gold in those hills, as my friend Donna Gigliotti likes to say when it comes to inclusion. Whether it's an equity rider, a modified version of the Rooney Rule, Just Add 5 to deal with the tilted ecosystem that we see on screen, or not leaving money on the table, inclusion matters. Sure, it may make money, so it might be the great thing to do from a business perspective, but from a human perspective, it is absolutely the right thing to do. Thank you.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack. Follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.